If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. Russia and Ukraine in winter. Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, my colleague and co-host, and we're very pleased to welcome here in the new year, John Hardy of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, who helps us on the battlefield and in the potential of peace talks. But we're going to begin in the battlefield. The headlines out of London got my attention in these last hours. For example, Ukraine launches new counterattack as top Russian general rush to the front lines. For example, Russia claims key Ukrainian town as forces continue advance. Subhead, Moscow's defense ministry says units of its southern group of troops had, quote, liberated, that's in quotes, industrial area after weeks of attack. Remember, the story told to the Russian people is that this is a war with NATO that means to dominate Russia's borders and perhaps Russia itself. This is a war between Brussels and Moscow, says Moscow to the Russian people. John, a very good day to you. The headline that I'm keen on right now is Ukraine launches new counterattack in the Kursk salient. I'm looking at a map of the Kursk salient and where the fighting has been and where it is now. What is your measure of this attack? Is Ukraine using good stuff? Is it evidencing an ambition? Are they driving for something? Good evening to you, John.
Hey, John. Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me back on the show. So yeah, yesterday morning, it seems Ukraine launched a fairly sizable attack, kind of in the northeastern part of the Kursk salient. Don't know exactly how many forces or what units. According to the Russian MOD, it was involved 80th Air Assault Brigade, so one of Ukraine's better units. That unit also, elements of it also participated in the early stages of the Kursk offensive. So we don't exactly know Ukraine's goals for this attack or exactly how big it is. But my best guess is it's fairly limited objectives, probably intended to kind of divert Russian forces and attention away from Russia's own attacks in the Kursk region. So this is, to my mind, fairly similar to what Ukraine did back in September when Russia first started kind of counterattacking in a serious way in Kursk. Back then, some Ukrainian units launched attacks toward the Russian city of Glushkova. Didn't really make a ton of progress, and it's unclear exactly how much those attacks diverted Russian forces from their own efforts in Kursk. But so to me, this is kind of a similar situation here. It seems that Ukraine may have entered and possibly taken a couple small villages kind of in that northeastern part of the Kursk salient. And so we'll have to see in the coming days exactly, you know, if they're going to reinforce it, how much progress they make, et cetera.
I summarize to see if I understand that this attack is similar to the original Kursk salient operation to draw off or at least to slow the Russian advance in other parts of the front line. Is that what you're seeing, John?
So not exactly. What I'm saying is that was indeed the purpose, I think, or at least one of the goals of the Kursk offensive. What I'm saying is, so that Kursk offensive started in August, and then in September, the Russians started counterattacking in a serious way. And so when they did that, shortly thereafter, the Ukrainians launched attacks in another part of the Kursk region, basically to try to divert the Russian effort to regain ground in Kursk. So it's kind of a, I guess you could call it a spoiling attack. It's probably not exactly the right word, but it's intended to thwart, at least temporarily, Russia's efforts to regain ground in Kursk.
Bill, you have a question for John.
Happy New Year, John. My question is what is the ultimate goal of the Ukrainians in Kursk at this point? They've expended a significant number of troops and material, or diverted a significant number of troops and war material to this area. What do they ultimately hope to do? Are they looking to exchange territory with the Russians at peace negotiations? Do they believe that the Russians would be willing to do so?
Right. So I think one goal shared by Washington, at least the outgoing administration, is to try to use that territory in Kursk Oblast as political leverage in potential negotiations. I guess one possibility could be to try to swap it for, say, the small bit of Kharkiv Oblast that Russia controls. I don't think Moscow would be keen on kind of using its territory as a bargaining chip, and it's officially ruled out that. And I think that the Russians will try to retake this territory before engaging in serious peace negotiations. I think another goal for Ukraine, similar to the initial objective, is to tie up Russian forces. I think initially the Ukrainians hoped that the Kursk offensive would kind of stall. Force Russia to stall its offensive in Donbass. That hasn't happened, but it has tied up some Russian forces, including some of Russia's better formations, like in VDV. These are airborne and as well as naval infantry units, and so that means they can't be used elsewhere inside Ukraine itself. And in kind of recent months, Russia has continued to send some forces to Kursk. So, tying those up is a good thing. Like the question really is the trade-off worth it? Is the opportunity cost for Ukraine worth it? That is, the formations Ukraine is committed to this operation, could be used on the defense in the Donbass and elsewhere, where they, arguably could be better used.
The headline out of London about the Russians sending a top general. Detail. The Kremlin has sent one of its top generals to the Kursk region to oversee Russian forces' defense against the Ukrainian counteroffensive. General Yunusbek Yevkurov, Russia's deputy defense minister, arrived in Kursk on Sunday morning, according to the acting governor for the Kursk region, Alexander Kinstein. Mr. Kinstein said that he held a, quote, working meeting with General Yevkurov, but couldn't divulge details. The reason I emphasize this, John, I'm working through the Battle of Monte Cassino, 1944, and the Italian campaign for the Allies versus the Germans. And generals are a very prickly lot. They don't like advice from their commanders. They certainly don't take advice from their subordinates. They have a plan, they execute it, and they can't provide a timeline. However, when someone superior shows up in the region, they worry about their jobs being replaced. Is that how to read this, John? You've watched these generals come and go for 3 years now. When the deputy defense minister shows up, does that mean the locals are regarded as inadequate?
So I'm not sure exactly what the purpose of his visit was. I mean, if Kurov, as you said, deputy defense minister, officially responsible for combat training, among other things. His kind of responsibilities have extended beyond his formal capacity. So it's possible he was sent here as kind of a emergency dispatch to help organize the defense in Kursk. But I think who he was meeting with is telling. So he's meeting with the acting governor. Like this could well be related to the formation of what are called BARs, or basically combat reserve units in Kursk and the other border regions. That seems to have been part of the reason for Yevkurov's visit. So, and I doubt he's playing an operational role in the operation in Kursk. That's just not really his job. So, I wouldn't exactly read too much into his visit.
But raising a militia or supporting a militia, is that how to regard those bars?
So the Russians, really since the Kursk offensive began, have been, back in August, standing up bars units in the border region. So I think that could be a reason why he visited.
Bill, you have a question.
Yes, John, as the Ukrainians devote precious resources in Kursk, the Russians have seized Kurekova and are on the cusp of taking the city of Turetsk. What does the loss of Kurekova mean to Ukraine's defense in the South Donbass? And what would the loss of Turetsk, how would that harm the Ukrainians, or is that not a strategic city?
Right. So Kurekova, Turetsk, these are kind of small cities in Donetsk Oblast in the Donbass region. The Russians have been, assaulting them for some time. I think they've probably taken all or maybe just about all of Kurekova and are kind of slowly inching their way through Turetsk as well. I think, these cities don't have themselves a ton of operational significance, but they are kind of important nodes in the Ukrainian defensive line in Donetsk Oblast. And so Russia is basically continuing to push the Ukrainians back slowly but steadily. And I think, one thing that's important is that, as the Russians have in some cases, taken cities like Kurekova, like Vuhledar earlier back in the fall, they may have taken those cities often after long assaults. But they have not really managed to encircle large Ukrainian formations. So with Kurekova, for example, there was a pocket kind of south of the city and then a larger pocket around the city itself. And the Russians have been trying to close those pockets and destroy Ukrainian units inside them, which could really exacerbate Ukraine's force availability problem and potentially allow Russia to kind of destabilize the Ukrainian defense to a much greater degree. But the Russians haven't been able to do that. So they've basically had to take these cities through frontal assaults, losing some of their own combat power in the process and kind of do it that way. So I think the moral, the kind of bottom line is, for Ukraine, it's not obviously not great to lose these important cities. It could make the defense behind them a bit harder, even that you lose those defensive positions. But it's not a disaster that the sort of disaster that would result from, say, Russia encircling it and destroying, parts of the 46th and 79th Airborne Brigades that were in that Kurekova pocket for Ukraine.
Quickly, John, there's a report about the North Koreans from a Russian military blogger called Milblogger, that North Korean soldiers have reportedly entered combat in response to Ukrainian attacks in the Kursk Oblast. Ukraine reported its troops had engaged in combat in November with North Koreans. And the observation by the Milblogger is the appearance of North Korean soldiers came in response to Ukraine's surprise attack. Do you have any information that North Koreans are being used in defensive role, in offensive role, about casualties, about captured? Any detail, John?
Right. So the North Korean troops seem to have been engaged in combat in Kursk Oblast for some weeks. It looks like the Russians are basically attaching North Korean platoons or companies to larger Russian units, especially from VDV and naval infantry units. And so kind of using them for assaults as dismounted infantry. I think the North Koreans, they've taken some significant losses. Don't know exactly how many, but they have added to the pressure for Russia in Kursk. So it looks like they've helped Russia retake some positions in kind of the northwestern part of the salient, as well as the southeastern part. I think one place to watch is the area around the city of Suja, as we've discussed before on the show. Suja is kind of the city right across the border in Kursk that the Ukrainians use as kind of their main logistics node. So supplies and equipment will flow into Suja and then fan out elsewhere into Kursk Oblast in that salient. So the Russians are really close to Suja on the southeastern, eastern side, of that city. And so that'll be an important thing to watch if the Russians can retake Suja, which is sort of protected in that area on that eastern flank by some kind of tough terrain. So that kind of works in Ukraine's favor. But if the Russians can retake it, they basically kind of cut the Ukrainian salient off at the knees. And it could lead to encirclement of Ukrainian units kind of further to the north in that salient. So that's one thing to watch.
John Hardy of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, Bill Raggio, my colleague and co-host. When we come back, rumors of peace negotiations, question mark. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.